nothing worthwhile. The recognized symbol of excellence in crappy podcasting.
We are America's number one bi-coastal podcast featuring two annoying Jews with a special guest. The name of the show is indeed Nothing Worthwhile, representing the West Coast in the fifth largest city in the U.S. That is, of course, Phoenix, Arizona. I am your host and moderator, Evan Moody. On the East Coast, it is the Kung Fu Kid in the great city of Coral Springs, Florida, Andrew Gruthius.
Good morning.
How the hell are you, my friend?
I'm much better now.
much better
new year.
From what?
It's a new year. Which means a new me and a new you and a new season of Cobra Kai.
Well, speaking of Cobra Kai, this episode is Cobra Kai Season 1 Roundtable. And joining us for today's podcast is friend of the show, pop culture expert herself, Miss Christina V. Christina, good morning, and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Hi, good morning. This is Christina Valenzuela, a.k.a. Christina V. I got to tell you, I grew up in the MTV generation. I'm a TV junkie, and I am a huge, huge Karate Kid fan. You know who the real Karate Kid is, and that is Johnny Lawrence. So, bit of Johnny Lawrence fan since day one, and it's good to see that there were some fans, or actually a fan of Billy Zabka on How I Met Your Mother. Barney Stinson, and it was cool to see that, and then I'm really happy to see the focus on Billy Zabka's Johnny Lawrence here in the show Cobra Kai, so super, super excited to talk about this.
Grew,
I get thank you for having me here. I feel so fortunate to be chosen.
Oh, so chosen. Ah, Grew, I think we're way over our head. I mean, we're going to get demolished.
I'm going to get schooled.
Yeah, I understand. Well, Christina is a good friend. She's a good friend of my girlfriend Marie, and they have a common best friend, Rochelle. So, every time I've seen Christina, she can rock and roll with pop culture like the best of us. So, we're glad to have Christina on. Guys, let's scale back to our last podcast. Neither rain, no snore, no sleet, nor COVID, nor technical difficulties could prevent us from finally completing our last podcast. It was indeed the final vestiges of the Karate Kid cinematic universe. It was the Karate Kid, the best of the rest. We talked about the next Karate Kid and the 2010 Karate Kid reboot starring Jaden Smith and Jackie Chan. Guys, we discussed the following in regards to the Karate Kid, the best of the rest. Why no more Ralph Macchio as Daniel LaRusso? No more Robert Mark Kamen and John G. Avildsen? Cast of the next Karate Kid? The really, really ridiculous plot of the next Karate Kid? Commercial and critical reaction to the film? The behind-the-scenes development of the 2010 reboot? Filming notes on the 2010 Karate Kid? The plot of the film? Critical and commercial reaction to the reboot? And will there be a sequel with Jaden Smith and Jackie Chan? So let's see here. Ironically enough, some of the viewer email centered around Gru's comments about Conan O'Brien. So let's get to it, Gru. If you got it queued up, let's get to it. Viewer mail.
Letters. We got your letters. We got your letters every day. Mailman.
All right, please check us out on our Facebook fan page. It's Nothing Worthwhile 1985 Facebook. I usually have it in my notes. I don't have it today.
I forgot.
Right off the bat, Grew, there were comments that, and again, I know I was still a little COVID depressed because I know I remember you saying this and I didn't comment on it, but Grew must have mentioned that Conan O'Brien, of all things, misplayed his Tonight Show firing. Comments say, come on, Gru, they never gave him a chance, could be a future podcast topic. Gru, my remembrance was Conan was clearly seen by most media outlets as the sympathetic figure in the whole Tonight Show debacle. Gru, care to comment about Conan O'Brien and the Tonight Show firing?
Yes. I think that, number one, I guess the way I worded it, whatever I said, was a little misleading. Once he got the Tonight Show, yes, it was very mishandled by the other side. But what I've known about, because I read two books about it, and it was pretty much common knowledge, is that he kind of, when everything was going fine, he was on late night, doing great. Leno was doing the Tonight Show. They were, you say what you want about the quality, they were reaping the rewards of the ratings. And Conan O'Brien and his team gave NBC an ultimatum, said if we're not in the Tonight Show seat within a certain amount of time, we're going to leave. And that is where I thought he misplayed his hand. You just don't do that. And that's what kind of caused them to sort of say, all right, Leno, 5 years, we'll get out in 5 years. And Leno didn't want to get out, but he agreed to it. And then the whole debacle happened.
Okay.
So I believe it was Conan who was the catalyst of it.
Hold that thought. Christina, are you familiar with the whole Tonight Show wars and any thoughts on Conan O'Brien, Jay Leno from a bunch of years ago?
Remember is, you know, Jay Leno was very sneaky about that. You know, he went into retirement. He came out of retirement. I was never really a Jay Leno fan. But I'm really liking the new Tonight Show. So that's just my opinion. I never really liked Jay.
So me being the final arbiter, no, I'm joking. But Christina is clearly correct. Gru, I'm surprised at your comments because, I mean, Conan's doing a power play, which we see all the time. We see it in our own jobs. I mean, you know, he says, I'm talented enough. I want this position in X number of years. I think where, you know, the sympathy came from was, you know, they went with O'Brien. Jay went away. Then they brought him back on that 10 o'clock show, which was a nightmare. But Conan certainly didn't garner the numbers, I think, that Jay had in the Tonight Show. And then within a couple of years, I think, what did they give Conan, a year and a half max on the Tonight Show? And then he was gone. And so
– no, 6 months.
You know, my memories were – I do agree with Christina. I think Jay came off as the – he got a lot of bad press, actually.
Oh, absolutely. And probably much of it was deserved. I remember at the time I said if I was Jay Leno, I would not do this 10 o'clock thing. I would say I have all the money in the world. I can go do my stand-up gigs. I don't need to do this. That's where Leno really tarnished his legacy.
Do you really feel that Conan misplayed it by saying to NBC, "Hey, I'm on a timeline. I want this crack at the Tonight Show by this time, or I'm going to take your talents elsewhere."
I mean,
athletes do it all the time.
Yeah, and I don't like it when that happens either, because if you're saying – you're basically saying, okay, if I am Tom Brady's backup quarterback, okay, and Tom Brady is still getting ring after ring after ring, that's like me saying, okay, if Tom Brady isn't out of here in 3 years, I am. You know, and when you have a winning formula.
I am shocked to hear you say that. I mean,
why?
Isn't that capitalism? Isn't that you people could take their talents? I mean, that backup quarterback, maybe he feels he could take a team to the championship.
But you don't do it. You don't do it in that way. You don't push a guy out when he's at the top of his game financially and ratings wise. You say, I have 3 years left on my contract, and I'm just letting you know I'm going to be fielding offers. That's what you do. You don't say, listen, that's what you do. You don't say, I know this guy's making you hundreds of millions of dollars. I know that he's number one. I know. But guess what? It's my time, so get rid of him. You can't – I mean, that's silly. I think.
I think that's a matter of opinion. I think if he said to NBC, look, if I'm not – running the deal by X time, I'm out. I mean, that's just a different way, maybe not a nice way, but it's just a different way of saying, hey, you got a guy above me. I'm going to take my talents to another network and see how you do. I think it's a matter of opinion. I hear what you're saying, but
yeah, I just, but after that, beyond that, it was Conan who got the shaft in every way, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I do sympathize with that, but the catalyst of the entire thing was his quote unquote demand, and you know that's that kind of it doesn't even the playing field, but it changes it a little bit, I think.
All right, guys. Speaking back to the Next Karate Kid comments said I had planned on seeing the Next Karate Kid based on the podcast, but after hearing your description, it's hard to believe a movie like that was actually made. Monks? Question mark. Yes, it's all true. Monks. Yeah. I mean, when
bowling
they had
monks.
The when they had the cranberries and the monks started dancing, I was out. That was it for me.
Thank
you, guys. Appreciate it.
Wait a minute. That was.
Hold on.
You've not watched the Next Karate Kid?
Evan, cover your ears for a second. Cover your ears for a second. Christina, is that what you know who meant when she was talking about dancing to the cranberries and dreams in what we just saw? Oh my God! Did they throw in a Next Karate Kid reference? Oh boy!
I don't know. Because I haven't seen the movie.
No, but
refuse as a Karate Kid fan not to watch that movie. It should be the Kung Fu Kid because they're in China.
That's what I said.
Well, hold on. That's the Hilary Swank. That's the continuation of Mr. Miyagi. Now the Kung Fu Kid. That's the 2010 reboot, and a reader wrote, if memory serves, the Will Smith movie was almost a word for word in some instances like the first one. They did not try and hide the fact. So I would not call the Karate Kid, the 2010 reboot, a word for word reboot, but it definitely grifts many of the major plot points, as Gru mentioned in the last podcast. I mean, Gru made a good point. In the 2010 reboot, when Jackie Chan has Jaden Smith take off his coat, pick it up, take off. We saw it. We saw it 30 years or 35 years earlier with Mr. Miyagi and Daniel-san. So, Gru or Christina, any comments on the 2010 reboot picking up many of the major plot points as the Karate Kid original?
I don't see the plot points, yes. Word for word, I'm not recalling.
Right, I agree with you.
I'm
but don't
recalling.
You think? I mean, it's like you said, the jacket, the cupping with the injury. You know, he's got. You know, they use the cupping with the injury. There's even sort of the philosophy. Jackie Chan explains that painting, and that becomes sort of the inspiration for the final karate move at the end of the. Of the tournament, am I talking out of my head right
no,
now?
No, that's those are the tropes. Those are the
Mr. Han had trauma just like Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, yeah, they it wasn't word for word, but they took the beats of the original and tried to be innovative with them, and they ended up just going sideways instead of forward.
I think it's generally safe to say that we both. Did not enjoy the Next Karate Kid, though. Sorry, Christina, we did enjoy Hilary Swank and her belly shirts.
I didn't see that one either. I didn't watch.
the crux of the debate beyond Hilary Swank's belly shirts was the 2010 reboot. As Andy, I think, said, we both felt and Andy can correct me if I'm speaking out of turn. We both felt it was somewhat an enjoyable, maybe competent movie is the better term for it. That perhaps was weighted down with the Karate Kid name. It really offered nothing new in terms of plot points, and it did repeat many of the plot cliches, which did not work this time around. For me, I actually thought it was going to be hot garbage because Andy had said to me, you know, hey, he never really got into it because he wouldn't ruin it for me, but I wasn't expecting much. But I have to admit that I did enjoy the movie. It kept my attention. Though it did not live up to the expectations of the original film. So Christina already said she has. Have you seen the 2010 reboot, Christina? I don't know if that was – did you see that one?
That's the one with Jaden Smith, right?
Yeah, have you seen that one?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That's the one I refuse to watch. I won't watch it at all. You know, I feel like Rocky V, you know, it didn't happen. I'm just adamant about it. I'm kind of mad at Will Smith. The way Ben Affleck's character's mad at him in Jersey Girl. Just wish it never happened. Wish he never had the rights. And I didn't see the Hilary Swank one because there was no, you know, Ralph Macchio. I just didn't feel right. So, you know, I'm a purist.
Well, Gru, Christina gave her thoughts. I'll throw it to you to wrap it up. Thoughts on our last podcast, Gru, the Karate Kid, the best of the rest.
Well, I mean, it's all been said. We, you know, we agree that that the Karate Kid 2010 is a competent movie, but should exist outside of the Karate Kid thing. It should be it should have been something else. It's weighted down, like you said, by the fact it's a cash grab. It looks like a cash grab. So they could have done something. They had a chance to do something new and something innovative, and they chose, you know, let's treat our audience like idiots. So that's what they did with that. And then the next Karate Kid, God bless them, but they just, you know, they figured let's turn Miyagi into a cartoon character, and we'll have some fun with him. We'll lighten things up a little bit, and it just did not it didn't fly. It was obvious they got very little money. Because it really looks like a bad TV movie, the less said about it, the better.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I listened to the podcast, and in the opener, you played the trailer to the next Karate Kid, and it's like it starts off real serious, like Miyagi has spent his life training, and it's like, you know, they play little clips of the first couple of Karate Kid movies. He's very serious. Then it's like, but nothing prepared him for wacky, zany teenage girl, and I'm like, I was like, I laughed to myself hearing the trailer, and I said, it's just like you described. It's like, let's take this real serious character and put him, you know, he's got to watch a teenage girl for 2 weeks in suburbia. Let's see what happens. It's just
should have been could have been a hit sitcom, but not a movie.
Well, let's go from a downer to an upper, so to speak, before as we start to dip our toes into Cobra Kai. Guys, what did you think when you heard about the television series Cobra Kai coming to YouTube Red? Cobra Kai based on the Karate Kid universe. What were your initial thoughts?
Christina?
I was stoked, let me tell you. Prior, I had seen I met Billy Zabka and Ralph Macchio at a Comic-Con here in Phoenix, and I just was hoping and praying something would happen, and it did. At first, I thought it was going to be a movie, and then didn't realize it was going to be a series. When I found out it was going to be a series, I was very excited because they could really like jump in, and you're getting more than you would from a movie. I shared with you guys that I went to the screening of episode one of Cobra Kai at our local movie theater. And right after episode one, they showed the original Karate Kid. And I got to tell you, I wanted more. I was upset that I had to wait for YouTube Red to post it. And I normally don't like to spend money on streaming, but it was so worth it. And I loved it. I was one of the first people to watch it when it first aired on YouTube Red. So loved it.
You know what? It sounds like we're like all polar opposites with streaming services. Christina doesn't like to spend money on streaming. Gru spends all of his money on streaming, and I spend some of my money on streaming. So there we go.
Okay, we've covered all the bases.
Thanks, Gru. Gru, your initial thoughts, just your initial thoughts when you read, hey, Cobra Kai is coming to YouTube. It's going to extend the Karate Kid universe.
I was excited in a very, you know, like nostalgic way, meaning this will be fun. It'll be stupid. It'll be silly. It'll be a parody, but it'll be great to see these guys have some fun, and it'll, you know, it won't last, and it'll be fluff, but it'll be fun fluff. That was my reaction when I heard about it. As simple as that.
Guys and girls, just how did this television series come to be? Courtesy of BusinessInsider.com, the article is how they turned their obsession with the Karate Kid into YouTube Red's first hit television show. It talks about filmmakers John Hurwitz, Hayden Schlossberg, and Josh Held. I bet you they celebrated Hanukkah. Oh! Okay, thanks, guys. The three of them grew up around the iconic 1984 movie. The movie was an ultimate telling of a kid overcoming a bully, but also showed the importance of respect, hard work, and a killer 1980 soundtrack. Hurwitz, Schlossberg, and Held were childhood friends and stayed in touch when they began their careers in Hollywood. Hurwitz and Schlossberg launched the successful Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, which I am a fan of franchise, while Held was the story creator and one of the screenwriters of the Hot Tub Time Machine franchise, the original starring William Zabka. The idea of continuing to tell the story from the original characters from The Karate Kid intrigued them, but as Christina and Gru have mentioned, the franchise rights are owned now by Will Smith's Overbrook Entertainment Production Company, which made, of course, as we said, The Karate Kid 2010 reboot. So the guys behind Harold and Kumar and Hot Tub Time Machine felt like they would not get a fair shake to make that serious movie. Streaming services began into vogue, and they said, you know what, let's shift the focus from a movie to a television show. Schlossberg said the changes and the evolution of TV led us to think that a television series could work. So they had to get a meeting with Overbrook Entertainment and then gain the trust of Ralph Macchio. The first hurdle was for the guys to get the rights to the next Karate Kid. As we said, it was owned by Smith's Overbrook, but also the estate of Jerry Weintraub, who produced the original movie, and the studio that released it, Sony. They were able to get a meeting with Caleb Pinkett, who I'm sure is related to Jada Pinkett, head of creative at Overbrook. And basically they went into the meeting and they said, hey, look, if you guys want to do another Karate Kid feature, you could still do that, but similar to Marvel – let's create a universe, a television show, you know, around the movies. To their shock, Pinkett didn't need much convincing. The 40-minute pitch turned into a strategy meeting on how they get the show off the ground. They took it right to Jerry Weintraub's estate, and they said – he was like, we're doing the show. The next hurdle was getting Ralph Macchio on board. They had already committed – Zabka had already committed to production. They turned their attention to Macchio. None of us knew him, Held said, but we had heard he was very hesitant to engage with anything Karate Kid related over the years. And despite our fandom, the article goes on to say that some of the things of the Karate Kid universe have grown into somewhat of a punchline in the pop culture universe over the years. And that it didn't help that beyond Karate Kid Part 2, all of the sequels had not made a lot of money and were nowhere near as popular as the first two movies. They were not going to take no for an answer from Macchio. They came into a lunch meeting with Ralph Macchio very prepared. It turned into a four-hour meeting. They answered all of his questions and all of his concerns, and they got Macchio on board. After Cobra Kai launched on YouTube Red, the show was immediately praised by critics. It got a 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and as the show reportedly performed better than many of the shows on Netflix and Hulu. The show just didn't have strong character development for its leads, Macchio and Zabka, but also introduced younger characters who are going through their own issues and who will be influenced by both the older characters for better and for worse. Schlossberg said, we have said all along there's no real character that's off limits from the movies. We want to make sure that we're introducing the characters the right way. We want it to feel impactful and to be connected to the stories we're telling. So what turned out to be perhaps a failed movie pitch morphed into a television series heightened by the rise of streaming services. Guys, any thoughts on the development or the notes of the Cobra Kai television show?
Well, I wonder what questions Macchio had for the guys. Was it like, can I quit my day job at the car wash? All right, that fell flat.
Well, I think, though, the article I gave a quick synopsis as quick as I can, but I did note that it was not curious, but as many – I won't call him a child star, but, you know, many people – you know, Gru, you were in Hollywood for a time. You know, actors, actresses, they get that one classic role, and it seems like they spend the rest of their career trying to distance from that role to try to get other work. Macchio has had some other, you know, performances of note, but his career has been relatively quiet post Karate Kid. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, and
My Cousin Vinny that he did pretty well with, but then you know it was really his role as Daniel-san that he's known for. You know, even though My Cousin Vinny did very well.
Well, yeah, because you know I think that he. The Karate Kid, I think it might still remain the only movie where he is the star. Like, I can't really think of any other ones. You know, My Cousin Vinny, he was not the star. He was
one of them, supporting role. He was a supporting role.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't really think of any other movie that he was in. The closest maybe he came was Beer League. But Artie Lang was the star of Beer League. And he was great. And Ralph was great in that. But he never really headlined anything after The Karate Kid of note.
Well, he did Crossroads, and I don't know if you guys
remember. I remember it. The guitar movie. It's not a bad movie, but nobody saw it except people like you and I.
Right.
You know, because you know I am and always have been a big fan of his. He's from my hometown. If you didn't know that, we went to the same high school. I think he was very protective of the legacy of the Karate Kid and his association with it. So I don't think it was like him having to, you know, looking for work. I think it was him being very reluctant to mess with what had come before. So I respect that. I respect that.
Hey, Ryan here. Just wanted to interrupt this program to let you know that the recording for season one that Andrew and Evan did together got lost, destroyed, nothing. So that's it. That's all you get for season one, guys. They apologize. We apologize here at Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network. But we're just going to roll right into their season two discussion. Okay? Here we go, boys. Take it away.
Well, let me just shout it out. We're America's number one biocoastal podcast featuring two Jews. 50 minutes later, the name of this show is indeed Nothing Worthwhile. I am on the West Coast. That's Phoenix, Arizona. I am your host and moderator, Evan Moody, with Braxton Moody on the couch, a.k.a. Puppy Shango on the East Coast. It is the Kung Fu Kid, Coral Springs, Florida. Gru, give us a quick how the hell are you, my friend?
Doing fine. So it's nice to be able to come back here and do what we enjoy doing the most, you know. So
I'm sure it's really tough for you, Andrew. You've got to overcome the man.
Well, the man is the man.
All right. Well, on that downer of a note, let's try to bring this podcast back up. What is it? Jake Tapper over here?
Wait a minute.
Let's get to it. Well, Andrew, let's move on. We're going to scale back to our last podcast. It was Cobra Kai Season 1 Roundtable. Miss Christina V joined us for the first time, our first female guest, as we discussed the following in regards to Season 1 of Cobra Kai, the creative forces around Cobra Kai, perhaps television is a better way to go, Will Smith owns the rights, everyone is on board, now we got to get Ralph Macchio. And, of course, we did an episode-by-episode breakdown of Season 1 of Cobra Kai. Not much to add here, Gru. All three of us were very pleased with Season 1. Though, again, I apologize, Gru. I did feel Andy laid it on a little heavy with comments such as miraculous, Jesus-like, and the greatest achievement in television since The Sopranos. Gru,
I actually
had a line about Hilaria Baldwin, but I'll cancel that for our friendship's sake. But any final thoughts on the Season 1 roundtable of Cobra Kai?
I think our coverage of it was Jesus-like and miraculous.
All right, well, Gru, let's move on. We've bantered for quite a bit. Let's tackle
this. Is Christina joining us today or no?
No, but season three, we'll get her back. I think that's the plan for season three.
Good.
Actually, Andy had we started our final taping because Andy had said something to the effect of, well, we liked Christina, but I'm good. It's going to be just you and I. We're going to really spar. And I felt like Andy was setting me up. Actually, maybe he felt that way about today's podcast, but I felt like Andy was setting me up for – he was just going to viciously fight with me over. But he basically said, nah, it's good that you and I fight more on the actual topic of Cobra Kai. I think that's what you were trying to say, which there was no offense taken.
Well, good, because it wasn't meant to offend.
Yes. Andy, season two remained on YouTube Red Service, which was eventually renamed.
Oh, I have that too. Add that to the list. I don't know why I still have it.
But now it's YouTube Premium, so you have YouTube Premium?
I still, and I know why. Because I like to play music from it. There's some, like I have Apple Music too, But like YouTube Premium, you can play music and how do I say this?
There's no pause.
There's no ads and there's no,
no ads, yeah.
And you can go off the screen like and still hear it with just the regular free YouTube. If you go off the screen, you can't hear it anymore.
How much is YouTube Premium a month, or how much is the year?
It's like $12 a month. It's so overpriced. I take back what I said.
Nah, it's okay. Listen, as Howard Stern once said, which made sense to me, entertainment is very important. So
it is, especially now.
We like our entertainment. Gru, the core of the cast remained the same for the most part of season two, so let's get to it. All right, you ready to – you got the – you queued up?
Got it ready to go.
It's time for a Nothing Worthwhile. We want to talk about this stuff. A Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown. It's episode one, Mercy, part two.
Episode breakdown.
All right, Andrew, all of our Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdowns are sponsored by New U Life Center. Phoenix Entrepreneur Magazine named them in the top 15 med spas to watch in 2021.
Really?
Again, check them out at www.newulifecenters.com. That's N-U-Y-O-U, lifecenters with an S.com. Or give them a call at 602-274-0068. Tell them Moody and Gru sent you. Tell them Moody and Gru are still best friends, and you'll get a 15% off on your first service. All right, Gru, big thank you to Maria and Dr. Cynthia. Let's get to it. Kreese's cigar gets bitch slapped. Johnny shows mercy to an old man. Make bigger circles. I beat Cobra Kai 30 years ago, and I could do it again. I hope Johnny bangs Miguel's mom. I made that up for comedic purposes.
We all do.
I love Miguel's mom. Miguel gets blocked. Cool it with the nerd shit. Stop the ass kissing and start the ass kicking. The world may need Cobra Kai, but we don't need you. Miguel and Hawk meet the fresh fish. No more fighting dirty. Sam takes a rain check. Metallica, nice. The 80s were the best era ever. Johnny runs into Robbie and Daniel. Miyagi-Do doubles its roster. And Kreese is back. Andrew Gruthius, your thoughts?
Well,
episode Kreese, one, Mercy part two.
This Kreese coming back, you know, that was the ultimate cliffhanger from episode one. And they start it literally, I think they overlap it even a little bit. They show that, I think they show that ending scene at the beginning. And then, you know, they fight a little bit, which is kind of cool. And then it's interesting to see them talk. And I love Kreese's character here. Kreese is as much stuck in another decade as Johnny is. Like they go into the diner and he orders like Sanka. Yeah. Like when was the last time you heard? When was the last time you heard somebody order Sanka? And he calls the waitress Dollface.
Actually, I think Family Guy did a Sanka reference
did
one time
really?
As well. Sanka and Stewie wanted for his headache Anison.
Like, yes, like what the hell is that? Yeah. So obviously Kreese I think they're setting it up to make Kreese like look like he's turned over a new leaf. But Johnny's not quite biting. And good for him. He seems to have learned. One thing that is that I'm not sure and I am going to criticize the show a little bit. I am not 100% at this point buying the Daniel Robbie relationship. It feels awkward. Maybe it's supposed to feel awkward, but I'm not.
In what way? Because I think I know what you're talking about.
It's just like
let's be out there. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Well, in the way that Robbie as a character, you know, they introduce him and he's like a juvenile delinquent. He's a troubled kid, and he's got to be like the nicest, sweetest troubled kid ever, you know, because he's this really like pure good guy, and he's lost the edge he had like for the first episode he was in, and that makes it seem kind of manufactured.
Okay, so here's to your point. They do. It's a pretty quick, but it's not a 180 turnaround. Robbie meets Daniel, and he's still a little bit dickish and still a little juvenile-ish. He makes one or two bad choices that Daniel kind of bails him out. But yes, he does have a fairly wonderful quick turnaround. I guess my point was, would it look weird for a 50-year-old to kind of take a 16 or 17-year-old boy under his wing and have so much interaction in this day and age? I guess maybe
absolutely.
That's not what I was thinking.
No, you're absolutely right. But you could say the same thing for Johnny and Miguel.
Well, at least Johnny has the
dojo.
The dojo, well, which I guess Daniel's trying to get off the ground, which he does in this episode. I think Sam joins, and now he's doubled his roster.
Yeah. Yeah. And you
hence
got
the
all these
doubles his roster.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but this is this episode is kind of like giving us some information. At its worst, the shows are still terrific. But this one, you know, it kind of moves a little bit slowly just to kind of build. So, and I get it. It's just kind of like, you know, telling us what we need to know to move forward. But I love the interaction between Kreese and Johnny. And is this the episode where I'm just drawing a blank? The episode kind of ends where Johnny is going, where Daniel goes to the dojo and he finds the two of them together.
I don't think so, because I think the end of the episode is, doesn't Johnny introduce Mr. Kreese, and you see that Kreese is now going to be actively part of the Cobra Kai?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I like that. I actually really like that, because it's going to, you know, there's obviously going, you know that it's not going to go smoothly, but you're still interested to see exactly how it goes. Is Kreese trying to be redemptive? Is Johnny going to accept it? And this sets all that up. So it's, you know, it leaves you wanting more. And the good thing about a bingeable show is that you can get more 2 seconds after you're done. So it's like, everything goes down very easily. This is a good opener.
All right. Let's move on, Andrew. It's time again for a Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown. It's episode 2, Back in Black.
Nothing Worthwhile. Episode breakdown.
Miguel and Johnny, AM routines. Don't look. Play it cool. Rick is flying me to Cabo adjacent. Sam still won't speak to Miguel. Class, we have a visitor. It's Mr. Kreese. I thought balance was your thing. Danny and Manny make their quota. Daniel successfully trains Robbie and Sam to find their balance. Cobra Kai trains at a cement truck. The LaRusso family has a new guest. Miguel figures it out. It's called America, big boy. Love it or leave it. Daniel confronts Johnny with Kreese.
There you go.
You're both in line for a rude awakening. Andrew Gruthius, your thoughts. Episode 2, Back in Black.
Well, first of all, I love the Rick Rude shout out there. By the creators. Rude Awakening, that was his finisher, Rick Rude.
Oh, was that – I didn't pick that. Was that actually Rick Rude?
Probably not. Oh, okay. But I do know that the creators are wrestling fans because they – as you've seen – you'll see more in season 3.
Are you aware of the Chris Helmsworth Hulk Hogan?
I am.
Supposedly that – I don't know. I don't think it's gotten off the ground yet, but suppose I guess he's training for it now.
Yeah. Hey, you know me. That's one thing I will never deny, that warts and all, I'm still a Hulk Hogan mark. So I'll be first.
And one other quick thing: are you aware of perhaps they're going to do a Vince McMahon docuseries? I think Netflix.
I heard rumblings about that. Not nothing specific, but that would be to me that would be fascinating.
Okay.
That would be absolutely
I apologize. Please go back to Back in Black.
Oh, so anyway, yeah, I love the way this episode opens. They got the AC/DC playing. You see Miguel and Johnny, you know, walking all tough and to the beat of the music, and it just sets the tone for some great stuff. I am not, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the training of Robbie and Sam. It's a little too – what?
No, I don't disagree with you. It's a little too hokey.
It's a little too Miyagi. These are different kinds of kids than Daniel was. You know, Daniel was all alone. Daniel had nothing. So when he was a kid, so. You know, and
are
it's
you
kind of,
saying that perhaps today's kid would have a trouble with a very sort of philosophical based combat sport? It's a lot of philosophy. You're getting beat over the head with my words are not coming out correct.
It's not that. It's that when you juxtapose it with the fun that Cobra Kai is having. Fun to imagine and fun to watch. Okay, then you spend 5 minutes watching these two balance on a pond on that thing. It's not as exciting. So for a viewer, it's like, okay, we get it. Now we want to go back to, you know, let's go back to Cobra Kai, which is a lot more fun and funny. But it's still necessary. But again, Robbie, and I don't know if it's the performance of the actor. I think he's good. He definitely season three. He is his
yes.
season.
Yes. But agreed.
But you know, he's kind of not the one you're rooting for, even though he's technically on the good side. The thing is so ambiguous that you can really make a case for both sides, but he's tough to root for because you want him to be more badass than he's acting.
Yeah.
You know.
So I think your point about Cobra Kai fun is definitely a good point because, you know, they're hitting heavy bags, they're smashing shit, which I think a lot of kids are.
And the cement truck really is amazing.
I think the thing is, I don't know if I would call that fun because they don't sort of have fun. But I thought
no, but it's fun to watch. It's fun for us to watch.
Right, but
that's
I thought
the
what the episode did is juxtapose the two different styles, and they're really trying to achieve the same thing, which is balance, except. Miyagi-Do is on this in this gentle pond with this floating sort of circular wooden plank, wooden board, and the other kids are in this grimy kind of cement truck that's spinning, and they gotta move quickly in order to keep their balance. So I thought maybe perhaps not correctly so, but the episode is juxtaposing the two different methods, trying to achieve somewhat the same. End result.
Yes, and it does that well. It just when you go back and forth, it seems that the Miyagi-Do method is getting a little repetitive. But then you think back to the original movie, and it got repetitive there too. But the difference was you weren't switching back and forth to the Cobra Kais. You were just focused on Miyagi and Daniel. So and the evolution of that. So this, you know, it's like they're doing this, and then it reminds you, oh, look how much fun they're having over there. It's much more fun to watch. With characters like Hawk and Miguel and Aisha and those people, and Kreese, you know, all the action. It's like Animal House. It's like you'd rather be watching the Deltas than Niedermeyer and his people. You know, it's kind of like that.
I think that's a good point. And I think was it season one? I think they actually touched upon because those two kids, I think Josh or. One the two kids go to join up with Miyagi-Do, and Daniel says, "Yeah, grab some paintbrushes." And they go, "This is bullshit."
Yeah.
And he says, "No, it's part of the process." So I think they acknowledge that this might Miyagi-Do karate is a tougher sell to today's kid.
Yeah, and you know what? It's necessary for the narrative. It's just not as much fun to watch as everything else, but that's perfectly okay. You know, and the episode still works because it goes from point A to point B. And by the end, you see them kind of like, you know, now Daniel knows when he runs into Kreese, he sees that Kreese is back and he knows he's going to have to step up his game a little bit, that things are about to get real. So and I think that's the purpose of this particular episode. And it works.
Well, things are about to get real, Gru, because it's time for a Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown. It's episode 3, Fire and Ice.
Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown.
Johnny discovers modern technology, Miyagi-Do on YouTube. All lessons are free. Love this one. Literally faked his own death twice. Asian whitewashing. Show no mercy unless it's his son. This is an act of war. Ah, I knew this was bullshit. No, this is part of the process. Don't be a pussy. Join Cobra Kai. We know Robbie is your son. Johnny confides in Miguel. I wasn't there. I failed my kid. One of the best things is teaching you. Valley Fest, the grand finale gets interrupted by Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai outshines Miyagi-Do and ice melting. Andrew Gruthius, your thoughts on episode 3, Fire and Ice.
This takes it from maybe 60 miles an hour to 90. It's really hitting its stride this season. This episode has the my pick so far as the best scene in the series, and that's the scene with Johnny and Miguel in the hamburger joint.
Okay, let me give you a quick. Are you saying overall, including we haven't broken down season 3 yet? Are you saying up to this point?
Up to this point,
or
up
overall?
To this point.
Okay, up to this point. Okay.
Up to this point, this scene knocked me out, and it was like. And the acting from both of them, and it just takes Johnny's character. I think it cements his face turn, to use a wrestling term. He's now, to me, he is now fully redeemed from any kind of negative feelings that anybody might have held for him. We see that he is a good man trying to be better, I just love that conversation. It gets us 1,000% invested in the Miguel and Johnny relationship, and it just makes us want to see more. And it also tells us a lot about Johnny and Robbie. So it makes Robbie more interesting. What William Zabka is able to accomplish in that scene with the writing and his performance is fantastic. And I love the Valley Fest, and it's where we first get to see my favorite new character, Stingray, who is not Stingray yet.
Chubbs.
But he hasn't shown up at the dojo yet. The first time we see him is at the Valley Fest. He's standing.
No. The first time we see him is episode 2, where they interact at episode 1 at Home Depot.
Oh yes, the clerk at Home Depot. Good. Yep, you're at very good. I stand corrected. Yes, him and Robbie's there too. There's a whole mess there. I forgot about that. Wow, I gotta rewatch season 1 now. But now we see him again, and he's only there for like 7 seconds, but it's hilarious. He's standing by the funnel cake machine, and they're making him a funnel cake. He's looking at it like drooling, and they lift the funnel cake out. It's dripping with fat and just grossness. And he looks at it and he's like, can you refry that? Can you fry that again? Like double fry it? Like, and then cut away. Like, that's it. And I'm like, this guy's going to be the best. This guy's going to be great. Whatever he does. Great actor too. Has Paul Walker Hauser.
He's good.
So he's kind of reintroduced there a little bit. The Valley Fest stuff is great with what Cobra Kai does. Miyagi-Do is trying to be Miyagi-Do, and they're trying to do the balance thing, and it's just not working for them. They really they keep getting one-upped by Cobra Kai, both on a narrative level and fictionally, the Valley Fest finale was a little uneven to me. I don't know why. Maybe because it doesn't drive things forward the way. Maybe I'm just hankering for more violence. But
you don't think that it cements your point about fun versus this. I don't know if heavy-handedness is the word, but Miyagi-Do is very rooted on this sort of peaceful, nonviolent philosophy, and Cobra Kai just gets out there and lets it rip, and they totally steal the spotlight at the Valley Fest at the very end.
Yeah, I do like that.
Probably a pretty brilliant move by Johnny. I mean, he one-ups Daniel on this one for sure.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I just for some reason when I rewatch, I find myself just kind of skipping that. maybe because I know what's going to happen, and you know, it's the kind of thing that, like, I don't need to rewatch. Like, there are certain parts, like that, like the scene in the burger joint, I can rewatch a million times. This part, I know exactly what they're going to do. I know exactly what it is, and it doesn't excite me as much as it should, I guess, or other people, because people seem to love this thing. It's just not my. It's still good. It's still fun, but it's not one of my favorite moments.
Were you not like me? I was somewhat excited to see Daniel pull out the sheets of ice and was hoping for a Karate Kid 2 revisit. But shockingly enough, Johnny Cobra Kai takes the momentum, and the episode ends perhaps symbolically with ice melting and the water dripping on the floor.
Yeah, that was good. But like I said, I don't know. It's hard to describe.
I'm a little bit surprised because you're a nostalgia buff, and I thought you'd like fall for it hook, line, and sinker. Like, oh, they're pulling out the ice. Like, woo, Daniel. And you're saying, it didn't move you too much.
Maybe it didn't, and I'm trying to figure out why. Because you're right. Everything you say is right. It should, for all intents and purposes, it should be like, holy crap, look what they're doing now. And it just didn't do that for me, and I'm not quite sure why. But that doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just right. it's just not one of my absolute.
So it sounds like Fire and Ice, you were you liked it, but maybe this is the first time I've heard you say perhaps you just weren't completely in love.
Not quite miraculous. But I'd still give it an. I wouldn't say Jesus. I'd say maybe one of the
Moses?
Apostles. Maybe one of the apostles.
Okay.
So I give it an 8. I give it an 8 out of 10. This episode.
All right, 8 out of 10. It is, Andrew, and let's move on because it's time for a Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown. It's episode 4, The Moment of Truth.
Nothing worthwhile. Episode breakdown.
Dimitri and Kreese, clearly not a match. We got to look people in the eye and connect. You're a little old. This class is for teenagers. Show little Miss Hotshot what Cobra Kai is all about. Love this line. That's Tori with a Y. You seem like you know how to kick ass. This delinquent happens to be our guest. Is Kreese really staying at the Sheraton? Tootsie from The Facts of Life apparently is a Cobra Kai fan. Daniel does the ponderous, I'm depressed walk on the beach. Sam goes through a table courtesy of Tori. The truth comes out about Kreese. Does your grandpa know how to move like that? And Dimitri arrives. Is that a koi pond? Andrew Gruthius, your thoughts on episode 4. The Moment of Truth.
Very big,
pretty good episode.
Very busy episode and very good, nonstop. I love the stuff at the country club. Always love to see Tootie, Kim Fields. She gets like hotter with age. Like she's beautiful.
Do you know Tootsie's Kim Fields' last appearance on television? And I know this, and actually you could rip on me for knowing this.
What?
Her last appearance on television was on The Real Housewives of Atlanta. She was a housewife for one season. And then they never brought her back, or maybe she wasn't interested in coming back.
Oh, does that mean she's
on a reality show?
Does that
show.
Mean she's married?
I believe, yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
She was like all over her husband. They seem to be
because
very
I never
much
because when she's not when I'm not distracted by Joe Polnicek, aka Nancy McKeon from Facts of Life, you know, Tootie is very pretty. She's a little heavy in the show in the Facts of Life, but as she's gotten older, she's got to be in her 50s, but she's still
beautiful.
Like
I'm the opposite way. Like I loved Blair, but I think she's gotten kind of a little long of the tooth. So now I'm on your.
Oh.
Actually, we can agree on the mutual grounds of Tootsie, yeah. Whatever Kim Fields this year. Yeah, Kim
but
Fields
Joe was my. Perfect.
You really like that tomboyish kind of vibe, huh?
No, she pulled it off. Nancy McKeon pulled it off like nobody's business. Like she owned that, yeah. And just I fell in love.
I was a Blair, but then I think now I probably go for Kim Fields. Yeah,
and I have to check to see if the restraining order is still in effect because I used to write her several times a day. But we'll get into that on our Facts of Life
podcast.
Yeah,
just speak to your dad. I'm sure he was representing
you.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I'm allowed to speak about it, but we'll find out. But yeah, so great to see that kind of familiar face. And I love how like they're able to pull these 1980s icons in, and they don't give them fanfare. They're just there like little nuggets for people like us. You know, the character has no significance except pretty much probably for us to all say, that's Tootie. And you know what? I didn't even recognize her at first. My brother, Steven, was the one who told me. She was like, "Did she what'd you think of Tootie?" I said, where? And then I had to rewatch. I'm like, holy shit, that is Kim Fields. Look at that. You know, because it's been a long time. But yeah, I love Dimitri getting his ass kicked by Kreese. It basically shows us that Kreese is going. It's giving us the direction that Kreese really is going in. Now this is where Johnny finds him at the VA at the shelter.
Yeah. As we informally talked about earlier, this is the one time where I actually had a little bit of sympathy or empathy for the Kreese character.
Yeah,
don't like him at all. But this is the one time, and I think perhaps on our prior discussions we may have slightly disagreed. I felt like you were not sympathetic, where I felt like Kreese was lying to give a bigger image to himself, like he's coming in. He's this military guy who's traveled the world and fought all these clandestine wars and secret missions, and you know he's coming back to save Cobra Kai. And yeah, I'm staying at the Sheraton. And wow, it's a beautiful hotel. You know, maybe this guy's got a few bucks. And Johnny starts to think something's amiss here, and he follows Kreese. And he's at, again, a VA shelter. I don't want to say homeless shelter, but he's at some kind of shelter, and he's fighting. And the manager steps in and says, if you don't pipe down, you're going to be on the streets. And I actually felt a little sympathy for the Kreese character, Andrew.
Okay, I did not for a couple of reasons. I know hindsight is 20/20, but I remember watching it at the time and thinking there's definitely more to this than what they're showing us.
Okay.
The person he was on the phone with when Johnny comes in, I feel like it was meant for Johnny to see it. Like it was like Kreese was doing that to manipulate Johnny a little bit. I think it was a little staged. I think in the show, not by the creators. I think the point was for it to seem like Kreese was, or maybe at least to have us ask the question: is it real, or is he messing with Johnny?
And well, clearly, as a viewer, I'm sorry, but really quick, clearly as a viewer, you know that there's some kind of lie going down.
Exactly. That's my point. And to me, this goes back when he's telling his story and all that stuff. The only reason it doesn't make sense is because if we remember the Karate Kid 3, you know, his best friend, the guy who owes him for life, is a billionaire. So for him to be in these dire straits all these years doesn't make sense. And it also begs the question, okay, if Johnny has been around this town all this time for 30 years, where has Kreese been? You know, I feel like there's got to be. I felt like the Terry Silver thing, you know, who you know, the fans of the movie know who he is. They mention him in the first season. You know, he was if not a billionaire, a multi millionaire.
Yeah.
So,
well,
you know
the,
what I mean?
the silver mention is kind of fleeting. But number one, number two, again. Look, friendships come and go. He may not be affiliated with
Maybe.
Terry Silver anymore.
You're right.
I felt like, you know, it really portrayed a guy that was down on his luck and he was kind of lying to give a false image of himself. You know, he's kind of a real macho, bravado kind of character, and I don't think his pride or his ego would allow himself to admit that he was staying at a shelter.
Yeah, see,
that's how I took it.
I took it as a lie the other way. I think
to manipulate Johnny.
Yes, I do. I did believe it at the time, and I still hang out.
All right, so
to that.
Where? Let me ask you. Where? So he's telling him he's staying at the Sheraton, like downtown. Let's say it's the fanciest hotel downtown. What's the manipulate? Or where do you think he was perhaps going with Johnny?
I think he knew Johnny well enough to know that Johnny would go looking for him, and he wanted Johnny to think that he wanted Johnny to think everything that you think. That Kreese was too full of pride to admit. You know, he wanted him to feel bad for him. He wanted him to think that, how do I put this? Like, he wants you to think that he's too proud to admit that he's staying in a homeless shelter. He wants you to think that because it elicits even more sympathy. Like, this guy really has changed. You know, he lied because he was too proud to tell the truth. Instead, he lied because he was trying to suck Johnny in because he only one thing, and that's to get back into Cobra Kai. And he knew this would do it.
Interesting theory. He knew this would do it. Interesting theory. I think it's a good one. And all right. You ready to move on?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to go to another Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown. It's episode 5, All In.
Wait.
We just broke
the fourth wall there.
That's right. Eli's sad beginnings. Current day Hawk gets a tat touch up. Dimitri is learning karate to stand up to Eli. D-Man gives a terrible Yelp review and Hawk is not too happy about it. Listen to your heart. He lives with the LaRussos. I know who you really are. Eli, take it down or we will take you down. Battle Royale at the food court.
Oh.
Some people learn faster than others. I'm so down with GOT. Moon is not going to date a bully. Hawk and Kreese have a confab. Miguel kisses Tori. Robbie almost kisses. Miyagi-Do gets vandalized. Mr. Miyagi's Medal of Honor gets stolen. Daniel confronts Johnny, but Johnny wants to be the bigger man. Daniel tells his truth. Cobra Kai students walk out. All this and more. Andrew Gruthius, All In.
Check this out. They open this episode by giving us the backstory of a secondary character. And we love every minute of it. That's the genius of this show. Because it's able to make us care about all of these people equally. You know, we're just as invested in Daniel and Johnny as we are in Hawk/Eli. We're just as invested in Miguel and Robbie and Sam and Tori. Like, the writers give these characters such depth and the way the actors just, I don't know, everything just works. So I love the opening. I love seeing, you know, it's good to see Eli back where he was in the beginning of season one, this bullied kid. And now we're meant to, again, it's supposed to be ambiguous. We want to strangle him at some point with the shit that he does. But then we see why he's doing it. You know, we see what he's been through as a before he became Hawk. And then with the second tattoo and he's coming on, you know, he's putting the moves on Moon. Like, this is Eli's episode. This is Hawk's episode right here. But it also holds our interest in so many other different ways. And, it's getting us all caught up in the teen drama stuff, you know, and, Miguel and Tori sort of getting together, and Robbie and Sam. Is this the one where Shannon goes to rehab, and Robbie moves into the LaRusso's house?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Wow,
because I would have notes on it.
I'm not doing well on this.
No, it's fine. Let me get a couple of things that you mentioned.
Okay.
You talked about Eli and the Hawk character. By the way, fascinating evolution, this character.
Yes.
It's so sad, but yet, man, I have no sympathy for that character. He's really done such a 360. There's not too much to like, in my opinion, about the Hawk character. though I acknowledge the backstory, and it is very, very, very sad. And clearly, again, our prior discussion notwithstanding, I've been a victim of bullying. And as your brother referenced on our email, I did a little bullying in my day, and I knew I didn't feel good about it. Even as a young kid, I knew it was the wrong thing to do, but young kids make horrible decisions. But it's so sad, but I don't like the Hawk character. And I think that's what good writing does. I mean, he's such a nut. Yeah. He's such an unlikable kid. I will give a shout out to Moon because boy, she looks good. And I know she's portraying a high school. I'm sure she's probably 35, but boy, smoking hot actress. Boy, she is a pretty girl.
But and it's interesting because we have a different view of Hawk, but that's what's so great about this is because ambiguous.
You like the Hawk character on face value?
I like him in that he's so much fun to watch. His evilness is so much fun to watch and his evolution. But I look at him and I think I've mentioned this before. It's kind of like Darth Vader in that there's a lost kid in there, and you're hoping that and you still hold out hope that it's gonna come back, but you're just enjoying the ride because every time we see him, he ups the ante. You know, like in the beginning, like in the first season, you know, he got the haircut. Then later in the season, he got the tattoo. Now he's going even further. He just keeps trying to top himself because he really has a desire to be the absolute baddest motherfucker alive for very good reason. But yes, you absolutely can justifiably hate him as you can feel some sort of justification for his behavior.
Yeah. It's a well-written character, and I don't think I don't watch a ton of TV, but that character has had a really wild evolution. It's well done. You could certainly buy into it. And you see a kernel of what Andy is referencing in a later episode. You see that Anakin, Darth Vader, I'll reference it because there is a brief moment where you get a little more Eli than Hawk, but it's very, very fleeting, and I have a theory as to why. We'll talk about it as we go down the line. All right, let's move on, Andrew. It's time for yet again another Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown. It's episode 6. Take a right.
Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown.
My least favorite exercise, burpees. Shut your cake hole, Chubbs. I'm sorry about what happened at the mall. Chris crosses the line. Crisscross. Jump. Chris crosses the line to Miyagi-Do. Tommy returns, and he's in really bad shape. The old crew reunites, and let's get the hell out of here. Back on the bikes. You brought back Cobra Kai? That's not all that is back. There's no honor in being merciless. I can't believe your dad let him in here. I used to be Cobra Kai. John Kreese is bad news. Cobra Kai can change. I want to play some pool with Tommy. Bar fight! It turned me into an angry and violent kid. Miguel and Tori, old friends, have one final heart to heart. Kreese is going to make sure Johnny gets back on track. And the show must go on, Andrew, because Cobra Kai never dies. Gru, thoughts on episode 6? Take a right. And let me guess, you like this one a lot.
Yes, I did. This is so up to this point, this was the best episode of the series. And for this reason, they use one of the most underrated Queen songs in history.
It is a great song.
But actually, this
were you at the show? Were you at the Elton John show at the Garden? Did we go together?
Yeah, we were there together.
Elton closed.
Yeah, we went together.
That was great.
Yep.
That was great.
Yeah,
that
we went. We were there together. Remember, we were there with Andrew Schwartz and Rob Perman.
Yeah, that was great. Remember? That was great.
Remember remember what we did for like the last 10 songs.
We just ran around.
We ran around that lower bowl thing that they got rid of, like tragically, because our seats weren't that good, so we just started running around the thing. We were like. like back when we were able to run. But yeah, I remember that.
Now I like, I'm so OCD. I got I find my seat and I don't move for the next 2 hours.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
As a carefree kid, we just ran around and got kicked out by the ushers all show long.
Yeah, what a great show.
All right, Gruel, let's go back to Cobra.
So this episode, it shows you how brilliant they are, because it's a very tricky thing for shows like this to be able to give the fans, to do the fan service, yet make it count, make it mean something to the narrative. Like, and I compare it, or contrast it, I should say, to the way Star Wars kind of does it. Because Star Wars, the characters are basically just there to sell us on the new crew. And they fail, you know, because that's not how it's got to be. The story has to be rooted in the old guard in order to sell us on the new guard. That's why we love all these characters. So
you've mentioned fan service a couple of times. By fan service, are you referring to a show bringing back old characters?
Yes,
just for
exactly.
that, just for like a cheap pop with not
exactly.
really integrating
exactly.
it into the storyline.
Like I think I knew before I saw this episode, I think I knew that the old Cobras were going to be there, and I racked my brain and I was like, okay, it'll be fun to see them, but what possible role can they play in this? And they do, because you forget, this show is about, more than anything else, it's about Johnny's journey. So they are part of Johnny's journey. So he goes, and it's also serves to make the turning point, like take a right. Like the reason that it's called Take a Right, I think it's twofold. I think because the season takes a turn at this point, because this is when Kreese slithers his way back in, covering for Johnny while he's going to visit Tommy.
Yes.
Okay. And take a right is one of Tommy's catchphrases from the first movie. Do you remember? Like one of the first thing he says when the Cobras first come towards the beach with the motorcycles, and he notices that Allie and Daniel are hanging out. So Tommy's like, hey, everybody else, it looks like you're not the only one doing something new. Take a right. Check it out. And he's like, means turn to the right. So, you know, so, and the fact that they bring these guys back in and they're just making it work. Tommy's sickness, and they go on a little adventure. They relive and they get to discuss things and talk about the past, make sense of things, come to terms with things, all the while this stuff is going on back home, which we're just as interested in and just as invested in. But then my favorite thing that they do here is that they take a character who was, you know, not a big part of the first movie, and with one simple line or a couple simple lines, they give him an entire backstory. And it's when Tommy and Johnny are sitting by the fire talking, and he says, they're talking about Allie, and he confesses to Johnny that he was in love with Allie too.
Yeah.
And then he says, somebody else struck first. And that, to me, it like brings so many different things together by even you just using the strike first thing. Like it's all of a sudden everything just melds, and that sort of, I don't know, in some strange way, it gives credence to there's room for everybody who has been a part of this franchise in these stories. And I just, I loved it. I love this episode. It's so good.
This is a good episode. I think this is where this starts to heat up. Do you think also by take a right, does this sort of symbolize Johnny kind of cements his notion, maybe not overtly, that Kreese, not good for Cobra Kai? Or do you feel
I don't think he's there yet. I think he listens to what the other Cobras say, but I think he still believes in Kreese. You know, we know that he's going to find out that this is, that not everything is as seem, but, you know,
Is that in your Miyagi, Miyagi accent?
Yeah. Not everything is as seem. But, I think that because he's trying to convince them that, you know, he's changed, and they're not having it. But then Tommy says, you know what? Screw this. I'm playing pool. Who wants to play pool with me? And they just have this great night together, all of them, just seeing these guys and hearing them. You know, they have more dialogue in this episode than they did in the movies. And they're all terrific. And just them playing their old motorcycle song as they're driving down and showing the little flashbacks, it all matters. It's not fan service. It means something, and that's why I love it so much. And then the ending of the show is so brilliant in so many ways. Just they're playing The Show Must Go On, and they zip Tommy up in a body bag, which is of course his famous line from The Karate Kid 1, get him a body bag. I mean, you know, it's obvious that the writers are huge fans of this. And I learned that, you know, because I once used to at least try to write.
All right, Andrew, hang on 1 second. Let me interrupt for 1 second. Because next episode is called Lull, but I'm going to ask you for real quick. I'm going to do one of my famous Moody got to take a piss break. Can you vamp on and just give me 1 minute to go use the restroom?
Yes.
Thank you.
So
speak to whatever.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. So now we can talk about Moody while he's gone. All right. So yeah. No, Moody is Evan is one of my greatest friend, my oldest friend. So you know, sometimes we go at it, and that's good. It's healthy. It's healthy. You know, after the show, we're gonna go down to the Jersey Shore, and we're gonna fight. And he'll probably kick my ass, but no, you know, weak bladder and all. I love him to death. He knows that. But anyway, yeah. So this Cobra Kai thing, just I guess to take a break here, is just everybody who knows me knows I'm such a huge fan of it, and I can't get enough. And season 3 just ended. We'll be doing that hopefully next week. I, you know, I don't want to spoil anything for those of you who haven't seen it, but if you haven't seen it, see it. It's just, it continues to be like, you know, I was criticized by somebody for calling it like one of the greatest shows ever made, but you know what? I can't ever remember being so jazzed by a television show or even a movie. Just like every single moment, every episode, everything just fires on all cylinders, and it's just this is my Breaking Bad. Everybody else loves Breaking Bad. They like it's the greatest show ever. I tried to get into it and I found it difficult. I guess this is my Breaking Bad. Just they can do no wrong in any way. So Evan's back now. What I was doing was saying how, you know, there are some people out there, like I was referring to the comment from one of our super fans about how I called the show genius, and he was like saying, "Come on, man, it's a fun show, but you know, like Dallas and this, like better than that." And I was just saying, I've never been so jazzed by a show before. Like I've never been so, you know, like so into a show, and especially at this age when parts of me is so jaded. And like, I don't want to waste time watching something I know I'm not going to like. I've never been this excited about a television show since, at least, you know, Different Strokes. But
well, I think you know, your point, which was, I mean, kind of mine as well. I had, you know, low expectations, and they've blown everybody's expectations away.
But once you realize that the low expectation bit theory is out the window, that this is going to be a good show, they still have the job of keeping that momentum going. You know, once the initial shock of wow, this is a good show wears off, they can't just phone it in on good faith. They have to keep trying to top themselves. And as far as I'm concerned, they succeed. I mean, this is episode 6 in the second season. And I'm saying it's the best episode they've made so far, in my opinion. So that's saying something.
Let's get Gru's opinion on episode 7. It's another nothing worthwhile episode breakdown. It's episode 7. Lull.
Nothing worthwhile. Nothing worthwhile. Episode breakdown.
Kreese thanks Daniel. This time I won't let him lose. Do you have a crush? Someday the fight may come to you. Welcome to Coyote Creek. Chubbs, a.k.a. Stingray. Tori gives a hell of a round kick. No lunch for Daniel. Dimitri is breaking through with baby steps. Hawk and Miguel tonight. That's all I got. Team Black. Good work, Stingray. Anoush quits and goes with Tom Cole. You said you can balance everything. Miguel does the right thing. Robbie does not. There's a difference between no mercy and no honor. This is my dojo, and I make the rules. We're done. Let's go to Mr. Andrew Gruthius. Andrew, your thoughts on episode 7, LOL.
Again, so much happening, and everything matters. Everything works. I love all they do with Coyote Creek, bringing in Stingray. He's got, you know, they call him Chubbs, and he calls himself Stingray, and he's got the what do you call what he does with his beard there?
He like braids the bottom.
Yeah, he braids the bottom. It's the weirdest look, but he's like, and he comes up, he's like, yeah, it's like now I'll be known as Stingray, and they're playing like badass music. And then Johnny just looks at him. He's like, all right, whatever, Chubbs. And then the music comes to a grinding halt, like, like it's really comedic. It's very funny. And Stingray's reaction is funny. And then that whole Coyote Creek thing is great. Like, it reminded me of, like, Color War, like Capture the Flag. Like it was really fun. And just the way it turns out when you have Miguel and Hawk going at it, and Hawk is like the
that
worst.
That was good.
Yeah, and Hawk
that
is
was good.
I love that line. He's like – he's like the worthy opponent. I love that.
Yeah, it felt like, as they say in the WWE, a big fight feel, like to see those two guys square off. And I think the other thing that it which I could have talked about earlier, Hawk, to his credit, always goes for the big game, but he always just seems to come up a little bit short. Every big fight, I feel like there's a pattern. Hawk, he's not afraid to go for it, which I got his he's got my respect.
He's got balls.
But he just can't seem to knock out the top guy.
And I think that says a lot that he hasn't quite. I know I'm going back to Darth Vader again, because in The Empire Strikes Back, it's interesting to see how Vader starts that movie as still like the most evil thing in the world. And as it goes on, he seems to be developing somewhat of a weakness for his son. And I see the same kind of thing here. Hawk is never quite fully evil. There's always a little bit of Eli showing through. And I think that's purposeful. And I think it's great, and I think the actor does a terrific job with it. And it's such an intriguing character, as is Dimitri. He's a little bit annoying in this. A lot of fans have a little problem with him. You know, just like everything is like a wisecrack, and like But if you see where he's going, you know, it works better. But everybody is just. Everybody's story is at full throttle at this point. Like Johnny, Kreese, Dan, this is where the thing with Anoush and Daniel and Amanda are starting to have problems. Because, and I think, you know, he ends up sleeping on the couch. Or is that in the next episode?
I think that's the next one. This is the one where he orders all the lunch and she's right. Like, nope. Not going to have it. I got a meeting. You didn't follow your planner or your schedule.
Yeah. So she's getting pissed. So you could sort of see that stuff's gonna start breaking down there.
Here is where she says to him, "You said you know you can balance, and you're not
right.
balancing.
You're not balancing exactly." And is this the one that opens with the flashback to Miyagi building the backyard? You remember? Like, and then it fades into the destructed, you know, the damage that did.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's a great part. I love Daniel's, when he goes to Cobra Kai and he's like, you know, I'm not going to strike first. And John, like you said, Johnny's going to be the bigger man. And he backs off, and that actually pisses Kreese off. Kreese wanted him to go at it. He wanted him to kick his ass. So yeah, everything is just, it's just moving at lightning pace now, where the first couple episodes, it kind of like, it was, like I said, it was going maybe 60 miles an hour. Now we're doing a Ferrari at 120 and everything is just flying.
I think here also, this is where Johnny officially tells Kreese, we're done.
Yep. And Kreese,
we're done.
Well, he comes back. He sees that Kreese kind of rearranged the office. He put up all his old Cobra Kai stuff, you know, and he realizes that maybe the Cobras were right. This guy's not just here to help. He's here to do his own thing.
To do his evil bidding. Yes.
He's
all right, Andrew. Let's move on.
He is the Emperor.
This is a good one. It's time for Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown, episode 8. Glory of Love.
Nothing worthwhile. Episode breakdown.
Whitesnake montage, and it's absolutely hilarious.
Yes.
Daniel's
yes.
on the couch.
Yes.
Sam and Robbie heat up. Dimitri locates the Medal of Honor. Carmen has a British boyfriend. It's a lot of sushi. Hawk and Miguel, enemies for a day, Cobra Kai for life. Mr. Kreese will no longer be joining us. Johnny proclaims Shades of Grey. Play Hide the Plantain on your own time. What's the deal with this app thing? LaRusso Auto Group and child labor. That's how the cavemen did it. Miguel might have to teach Johnny. Johnny and his dates. Message sent. The British boyfriend is an asshole. It's not a date. Heard that one before. You're lucky I show you mercy, mate. Johnny apologizes to his wife and takes a trip down memory lane. Johnny asked the right girl out. That warmed my heart. Andrew Gruthius. Thoughts on episode 8,
first
Glory
of, all,
of Love.
First of all, best opening to an episode with the White Snake. That hot dream that he's got.
I loved it.
What a great – and you're really rooting for Johnny and Carmen to get together.
Yes. Like, I bought into that hook, line, and sinker.
Like, we're not even thinking – even though they've mentioned her, we're not even thinking about Allie at this point. We love Johnny's relationship with this family, with Miguel and Carmen, and like these are the people we want to see together. So it's a great opening, and just everything that happens, from that, every relationship. Is this the one where they're at the they go roller skating? They're at the roller rink, and Robbie's dressed up like Don Johnson.
From
Miami
80s,
Vice. Yeah, it's 80s night.
Yeah.
You know, and they're playing I forget the song that they're playing. But it's a typical 80s song. Reminded me of the old Laces in Lawrence or Cedarhurst, remember
this? Yeah, we had in Oceanside, we had Hot Skates and there was one other place.
Laces was where we used to have the camp reunions, I think.
Hot Skates was Rockville Center actually.
Yeah. But are there even roller skating rinks anymore? They're skating. They're not rollerblading. They're roller skating. And so that was great. And yeah, there's, the tension between Tori and, Sam is building, which also, bleeds down to Robbie and Miguel. All of this is just, it's obviously leading somewhere, but the beauty of it is that we really don't know where it's leading to. Like, it's like a day. It's like we know there's going to be some kind of reckoning. We just don't know. In comparison to the first season, we knew that it was, about halfway through the season, we knew everything was leading up to the tournament. Here, we don't know where it's going. And that's what's so exciting about it. There's another show. I don't mean to deviate, but there's another show that I'm watching right now. It's on Showtime. It's called Your Honor. With Bryan Cranston.
I've had people talk it up to me and say it's really good.
I really like it. It's a little out there, but my dad turned me on to it, and it's really good, and it's not binging. It's like every week is a new episode, and every week I realize that it's only going to be for one season. I think they announced that, but I'm like, sitting there asking, how the hell are they going to end this? And that's what I was saying about this second season. I'm like, where are they going with this? I can't wait to see where they go with this. You know, because everything is just heating up between Carmen and Johnny and Daniel and Amanda. And this gives Daniel's mother her, in my opinion, her best scene in anything in the Karate Kid universe. Like, she was in, she was a major part of the first movie, and she had a small moment in the third movie. But the scene where she is talking to Daniel on the couch and talking about the time at Coney Island with Daniel's father, and we learn about them, like, it's so moving and so deep and so telling. It tells us so much about things that we might not have picked up from the first, from the original movies. And it had me thinking that these writers must go through the, must constantly keep watching these old movies and find little nuggets of things that they can turn into something big. Like the Tommy stuff in one of the previous episodes, and this with his mother, yeah, and the relationship with his father. Like, and that's just, you know, it just, it, I know I keep repeating myself, but it just, it keeps topping itself with these things that look like fan service, but they're not, they're show service. You know, they're necessary. They wouldn't be as, the episodes would not be as good without all this. You know what I mean?
See, only on Nothing Worthwhile are you going to get Hollywood insider terms like fan service, which I never heard of before. It's well done. I'm going to call BS in season three on something when we get to season three that, okay, I thought was a little forced. But here it sort of feels organic. Now, this is the – all right, so a couple of things. What about the British boyfriend? Felt it was a little hokey. The arrogant British boyfriend who's wealthy. Yeah. Carmen's a very modest kind of girl. I don't think she'd go for that anyway. Thought that was a little hokey.
Well, the hokey part of it. I don't mind that he is what he is. That doesn't bother me.
Haven't we seen in a lot of television shows, sure, and movies the arrogant wealthy British boyfriend?
Well, the only contrivance here is Johnny overhearing this guy giving all the information. Like, he just happens to be in this bar, and this guy who's dating Carmen is talking to his friend about, yeah, I'm dating this woman who, she's got a kid. I hate him, but I'm going to drop her on her, you know, like, and so of course Johnny's going to go and take care of this stuff. That's a little contrived, a little hokey, but at this point, the show can do whatever the hell it wants, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
If they want to stretch the imagination, let them. They've earned it. You know, and even with this, you know, it's a little cringy, but it's fine because it's brief. You know, if they dragged it out, if this guy actually fought back and didn't just say, you know what, it's not worth it, goodbye. You know, perfect. You know, if they dragged it out, then it wouldn't work.
Yeah, I think the other key piece for this episode, I mean, there's a lot, but I think the real standout piece is the accidental message being sent by Johnny to Allie. I think it's Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
I think the girl bumped into him, or somebody bumps into him, and he sends the message, which will have shockwaves and reverberations in seasons to come.
No spoilers.
No, well, not at all. Uh-huh. All right, Andrew, let's move on. It's time for another Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown. Episode 9.
Nothing worthwhile. Episode breakdown.
Tori and Sam workout montage. Mom, rehab. I love your earrings. Do you know each other? Moon hosts a party. Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do square off. Sam gets the cup. Moon kisses Piper, and damn it, that's just awesome. I want Cobra Kai to be better. Crease is gone for good. Hawk pours a drink on Dimitri. Sam outdrinks Tori. Did Johnny actually joke about getting kicked in the face? Focus on me. Make it a double. Miguel. Robbie. I need some air. Dimitri makes a toast. Handshake. Miguel, wait. And the kiss. I smell a rumble. And Johnny says goodnight and gets some unexpected visitors. I'm at, because this is where our podcast cut off last time.
Right.
So now I am very interested to hear Andrew Gruthius Your thoughts on episode 9, Pulpo.
Well, this is, again, they're, you know, they're just moving very quickly, and rightly so. They are, it's the penultimate episode of the second season.
What do you mean by that?
It's the second to last.
It's okay. I thought because can I give you my thought? I have a lot of thoughts about this. I want to hear you respond to me.
Go.
Best, again, second season, episode 9 is the best episode in the series. Pulpo, to me, is the best episode. All right, Tori and Sam, even the mother rehab, maybe a little but the party, I love the party. I love Sam basically beats Tori at her own game. And again, here is where you see Johnny and Daniel in unfamiliar, but you've always wanted to see them in almost a friendly atmosphere. And I thought the part where Johnny actually jokes around about Daniel kicking him in the face, I was like, and again, Andy talks a lot about, you know, but I was like, as a viewer, I was like, wow, like that's, I think that's awesome. Maybe Andy disagrees.
Yeah, I but do. I agree really, with you.
It really shows like growth. And again, they're like on the, it's like a tug of war. Like they're almost crossing the line into friends, and we'll see. Doesn't quite happen. I thought, again, it sends a different, the wife, Amanda, Carmen, their interaction. I love Johnny and Carmen's dance. Carmen says, focuses on me. I really felt like they had their chemistry and their relationship. And I thought the ending, again, Robbie and Sam get drunk, and Sam can't go home to their, you know, their upper middle class. You know, she can't deal with her parents. And so, you know, Robbie, again, it's weird his thinking, but let's go to my kind of my low level dad in a sense. Yeah. And he'll let us crash. He'll let us crash for the night. A lot happening here. Again, it moves quick because it's obviously leading to the conclusion. But for me, 2 years in a row, episode 9 was my favorite episode in Cobra Kai. Gru, respond.
I put it up there. To me, this ties with Take a Right with episode 6.
Okay.
But yes, this episode is spectacular. And just the way they juxtapose the two kind of quote-unquote parties – the adults are having a civil conversation. I'm in love with Amanda. I'm in love with Daniel's wife. She's just great.
She is good. She is good.
She's
I love
so
Carmen,
my,
but I
she's,
can see where I,
she's
lo- I
so
love
my
the,
type.
The Amanda character is a good one.
She's so sassy, and I just love how she just sees through everybody's bullshit, and she's just like – she's like, okay, we're really going to do this. We're really – you 50-year-old guys are really going to, you know, still – talk about this karate bullshit from high school. All right, fine. You know, and I love their dynamic where they keep trying to one-up each other for a little while. Then all of a sudden, what do they agree on? That you have to write it down. You know, the waitress, she's taking their orders, but she's not writing it down. And they're like, you got to write, aren't you going to write it down? She's like, no, I got it up here. And they're, yeah. They're both like, guarantee she messes something up. And she does. And so they agree on that. Then both couples are dancing. They sit together. It's just, it's really cool. Then they agree at the end. You know, they're like, look, we'll never be friends, but that doesn't mean we have to be enemies. They even shake hands. I guess for the first time, do they even shake hands after the tournament in Karate Kid 1? He gave him the trophy. I don't remember if they shake hands.
I know
hands.
He hands him the trophy and says, you know, good job, kid. You know, if I could just piggyback on those comments, to see the two couples dance on the dance floor in such a social environment, I couldn't remember. I mean, we saw Rocky and Apollo have a friendship, but
right.
To take it to the point where they're socializing on, let's say, a Saturday night at a local bar or restaurant is so darn surreal.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really like this episode.
And their chemistry is excellent. They just have such good chemistry, which is going to play even further in season 3. But I also love, and while this is going on, the party at the house, and I just love Stingray here. Stingray gives one of the greatest line readings I've ever heard. When the cops show up and he's like, oh shit, the cops, my mom's gonna kill me. like, and he's double fisting and he's got the bottles of beer taped to his hands so he can't get rid of them. So he like runs out and he's like, oh shit. to me, this is so funny. I love how Hawk sort of becomes Eli a little bit.
Well,
you know?
this is what I referenced earlier, because it kind of crystallizes the whole the psychology behind the friendship, which is, if I remember correctly, I'm not looking at my notes, Dimitri, they sit on the couch, Dimitri references like a Doctor Who episode or some kind of nerdy, geeky shit, and Eli Hawk is interested. Wait, and for a second he lets his guard down, and when he realizes, wait a second, I'm soft.
Well, I think doesn't he realize that people are watching him, or somebody sees him talking to,
most likely, and then he just goes off on Dimitri and pours a drink on his head, right. And now you see for the first time Dimitri has a little bit of a nasty streak, because he goes and grabs the mic and just does a rip job on the mic on Hawk. And, of course, Hawk, I believe at the end, he's like, you're going to get it. And then he threatens to kick Dimitri's ass. And then the police come and everybody scatters. But you kind of see a crystallization of that friendship. And I think Hawk is so physical and so bitter to Dimitri, because Dimitri reminds him of his old self.
Yep. And it just – it adds to the dynamic. And we care. And we enjoy seeing these two together. And part of us is rooting for them to be friends again. You know? And just – again, I keep saying it, but the fact that we are emotionally invested in all of these characters and their relationships with each other is a true testament to how great this show is. You know, there's not a no pun intended, there's no lull in anything. Everything just works.
Time wasted, fan service.
It's true. It's true. It all works.
Well,
and I love I love Daniel's reaction to the Cobra Kai car. He's like, "You couldn't help yourself, could you?" You know, when they're waiting for their cars to come with the thing, I think that's a great moment too.
Well, and then of course the ending, you know, something's going to happen with the kids crashing over at Johnny's house. So let's get to it, Andrew.
Yeah.
It's the final episode of season 2. It's time for another Nothing Worthwhile episode breakdown, episode 10, No Mercy.
Episode breakdown.
All right, our final breakdown of season 2, Robbie and Sam crash. You want to finish this? They fall out yet again. First day of school. Maybe you can learn a thing or two from each other. I don't have any actual experience, per se. I'm coming for you, bitch. Dimitri finally gets one up on Eli. Full-out brawl. Sam wins. Mercy and honor. Miguel loses, and it's a big one. Robbie, what did you do? Johnny loses Carmen. Johnny finally listens to the voicemail. Kreese returns yet again. If he dies, that's on you. Handshake deals, and there are no guarantees. I founded Cobra Kai. It belongs to me. You want Cobra Kai? It's yours. No more karate. It's over. And Facebook friend request. Gru, it's the final episode of season 2. Give us your thoughts. No mercy.
Pandemonium has broken loose at All Valley High School.
I have a lot of thoughts about that.
I'm sure you do. And so do I, but this is I love the little nuances more than the scene at their house, at Johnny's house, when Daniel comes in. I really like that. I like the way that plays out, even though it's sort of another Three's Company moment. Where all they have to do is just say, "Hey, this is what it is," but you know that would shorten the episode by about 25 minutes. But
if I could add, you're right, because there is a lot of like coincidence and timing that causes tension throughout Cobra Kai.
Yes,
but to quote my wrestling shirt, that one felt real to me, because you could see a dad. He's upset. His daughter didn't come home, and he's at, you know, this guy's house, and what the hell's going on? So that one, a couple of times it was like, yes, like a little too Three's Company, you know, Company-ish, to quote you. This one, I kind of felt like you could see the rigidity, you could see the conflict here.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. And that Three's Company stuff doesn't bother me, you know. I love Johnny and Daniel, how they almost how they sort of start to fight, and then the kids stop it. I love Johnny taking Robbie to school, saying he couldn't find a trapper keeper. We all remember those, you know. Yeah. And he's talking about like I had one with a fighter jet on it. It was awesome. You know, just all this stuff is just like I feel that one of the greatest things, you know, one of the many great things about the show is that we seem to be able to identify with just about everybody. Like I can identify just as easily with Daniel as I can with Johnny, as I can with Miguel, as I can with Eli, as I can with Amanda in a way. It's just like we understand where everybody's coming from. And all of that is coming to a head in this in what is going to happen at the school, which I know what you're going to say, and I think I agree with you. But let's hear it.
Let's cut the bullshit because I almost interrupted you, and I apologize. But let me
go ahead.
You want to go first because I got a lot of thoughts.
No, I want
about
you.
Crease.
I want you to go.
Okay. You talk about nostalgia. I think about even like when Gru and I are as wrestling fans. You know, Hulk Hogan comes out, Andy's popping, and I might be like a little bit more like, where's the psychology here? And on the surface, I have no complaints with the finale. Critically, though, it doesn't look like any high school fight that I've ever seen as an administrator. It didn't feel like any fight I've ever seen at a school. We've both been in schools for a long time. Individual set pieces where everyone just coincidentally squares off. No teacher, no one old security guard. That's not happening at a suburban high school or any high school. And so I guess, again, to quote my wrestling shirt, it didn't feel real to me. On the surface, I have no problems with it. Everyone loves to see a good fight. I have no even problems with the Robbie Miguel because that could happen.
Yes.
But this notion that, you know, everybody's going to square off, and even the two nerdy kids, the Asian kid and the white kid, I just felt like it was I felt like you could criticize that. And then I'll get into Kreese afterwards, but let me throw it back to you on the fight. On the pure enjoyment level, no complaints. As more of a critical viewer, I thought it was kind of hogwash.
It's hogwash, but it's great hogwash.
Ooh.
It's delicious hogwash.
I don't want to fight with you because we've done enough fighting on this episode, but I mean, all right, let me hear your thoughts.
Well, no, it's comfort food. It's McDonald's at 2 o'clock in the morning with a McShake. You know,
but at no point did you watch this and go, kind of bullcrap.
Not like that. I laughed when I said, I'm like, this is ridiculous, but it's so much fun. I was like that. Of course it's ridiculous. Of course, I think there's no other explanation to say that they knew it was way over the top. But to me, the show has earned that kind of, you know, thing. But yes, but you're not, you're 100% right. It just doesn't bother me. And of course, when I was watching, I was like, where the hell are the teachers? Where's security?
Yeah, Chris squares off against, I forget the kid, the chubby white kid. The two nerds square off. The only time I actually got satisfaction was I loved Dimitri. Kicked Eli into the glass case.
Yeah, I suppose
got a little bit of revenge.
Yeah, I suppose. I think when I saw it for the first time, I was so excited by it, none of that bothered me. Upon subsequent viewings, I think maybe if I were writing the show, maybe I would have had that thing be like a rumble in the woods or something, or. You know, like so, like
okay, that's
like
okay. That feels a little bit
more
real
to
me.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe
we know kids. We know kids talk trash, and they say, "Meet me after school." You know, at the park. Meet me at that. We know that's what kids typically do.
Yes, and you know, of course, Tori going in and announcing, "I'm coming after you, bitch." On the
we know
she wouldn't make it 4 feet out of that office. Of course, all of that is true. But all of that aside, okay. The fight and everything still accomplishes everything it needs to do as far as the relationships between the characters and where each one is going. So, you know, Tori and Sam, Miguel and Robbie, Eli and Dimitri, Daniel and Johnny. Everybody gets involved. Stingray's part in the fight is priceless. You know, he just comes.
Stingray's interviewing as a security guard at the time.
And
coincidentally, he does mention he has no experience, and he's walking in the hallway. It's a great comedic scene, but again, it doesn't ring true.
Of course, he's
punching kids.
He's
drop kicking kids like you know that would never happen. All right, let's go into it real quick. Sam, in a sense, beats Tori.
We have six minutes left. Just letting you know.
Miguel and Robbie. I mean, that's the big thing. Miguel is injured. He's paralyzed. What do you think about that ending?
Hell of a cliffhanger. I mean, obviously, you know, we know that he's going to survive. Just what extent? But we also are wondering what's going to happen with Robbie. We're like, okay, Kreese is in Cobra Kai. Johnny's giving it up. Amanda's telling Daniel no more karate. So we sort of end with asking ourselves on many different levels, what's going to happen? Because everything, and I mean literally everything about the show, is changing. Every dynamic. So now we're like, okay, where is it going to go? And
all right, I'm just going to let me throw this out here because we were on time constraints. I also didn't like the whole Kreese taking over Cobra Kai storyline. Handshake agreements. A guy is out of town for a couple of days. He's not losing his business. I thought, again, with Kreese, it's just a little gimmicky and hard for me to buy into it.
I see your point, and I almost agree with you. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that my prediction is that Terry Silver's behind all of it, which, if true, lends some credence to it. Because he does say, Cobra Kai is mine. It's always been mine. You know, and that kind of, because he and Terry started it together. Like, Terry bought it for him, you know, way back when. So I don't know if that's where they're going. But I'm going to say that if that were the case, would that make it less hokey for you?
Well, but Andy, you know, I guess I'm too real world. I like realism. A guy is not losing his business because he goes to San Bernardino for 3 days, even on a handshake agreement. You know,
unless a millionaire pays off the landlord.
We called bullshit on Karate Kid 3. They go away, and all of a sudden South Seas is being renovated. Or, you know, they're knocking it down, and they lose their apartment. I equate that to this.
At worst, they're taking liberties. At best, they can explain it through
Now,
through
what
that.
I think, obviously, the show does well in Season 2 is it makes you want to watch Season 3 really badly. So, all right, we're running out of time. Let me just say this before we end. I have to be humble. I love you, Andy. I'm sorry if my words were wrong words. I cannot let something silly, really in the big picture, silly affect a friendship. I apologize. We got caught up in the heat of the moment, but I do love you.
Likewise.
I got to be humble.
Love you too.
And I apologize if my words came on a little bit strong.
Good radio. But thank
all
you.
Right. Good
but,
radio
thank,
it
but,
is.
But thank you. That's very. That's
all right,
the
well,
feeling.
Guys,
the feelings are mutual.
Shockingly enough, we will have another Nothing Worthwhile episode next week. We will break down Season 3 roundtable to end our Karate Kid block of programming. We'll try to get Miss Christina V back on the air.
Yes.
Gruth, take us out of here.
All right. Well, yes. Thank you very much. This has been great. Cobra Kai Season 2. Our recap is concluded. Please tune in next week for Cobra Kai Season 3, as the French would say. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Nothing Worthwhile. We certainly did on many different levels. From your hosts, Andy Gruthius, Evan Moody, and Braxton the Dog. We wish you all a very, very happy and healthy weekend. Please stay safe out there and join us next week for Cobra Kai Season 3, only on Nothing Worthwhile. And with that, one, two, three. Rip them.
Bum. I just want to apologize. Please take this seriously. Don't make a mockery of this apology. When I went into the tub, please don't make a mockery of this apology.